Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, world. This is Kitchen Politics 123 Podcast. We thank you for joining us. And it is Monday, March 25th, 2025, tax season coming up. So make sure you do your taxes. This is Season 6, Episode 52, Bidenomics, the topic, the many successes and achievements of U.S. President Joe Biden, Democrat from Delaware, a review of the dangers of Project 2025 to America, and the latest on Trump versus the state of New York case. Did New York Attorney General start confiscating his properties, or did he find a way to come up with the $500 million he owes? If he did find a way to slam his way out, who funded it? We thank you for joining us tonight on Kitchen Politics 123. Call in 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling in from. Turn off all background noises as a distraction. We appreciate your listenership and occasional call. Thanks to Jerry, Breton, and June for all that they do in promoting us as well. This is Kitchen Politics 123, the radio show. I'm David Franklin, New Mexico.
Hi, good evening. This is Lori Pica from Michigan. And like David said, we are going to talk about President Biden and Vice President Harris's successes. We can get them in 2024.
Yes, indeed. And the number again to call in, 515-605-9802, say your first name and where you're calling from. And, you know, 17 things that Joe Biden did on day one. Through executive orders, he overturned Trump's policies and started making his own. And we're going to go through that one by one. But first, Joe Biden signed more than a dozen executive orders in his first hours as president. It was on a Wednesday, and the first salvo is coming legislative and regulatory crusade to erase Donald Trump's legacy from federal law and advance his own agenda. While many of Biden's first policy moves were expected reversal of Trump policies, others go further. and his team has signaled that many more actions will be announced in the days ahead. Together, they laid out what the top priorities of the administration will be: ending a pandemic that had killed more than 400,000 Americans, rescuing an economy battered by COVID-19, and taking steps Democrats have long demanded on immigration, the environment, and racial justice. Yet Biden has also stressed repeatedly that he would rather work with both parties in Congress to accomplish his policy goals rather than act unilaterally. And he has so far avoided many of the step progressive groups and lawmakers wanted to take, including canceling student debt and overriding the patent of drug develops in public funds. Here's what Joe Biden did and what does it mean for the country. Should I start or you want to go to the first one?
Go ahead. You can do the first one. It's fine.
Okay. So he required, the government required masks on federal property. Biden had ordered a nationwide mask wearing and social distancing mandate on federal lands, in federal buildings, and for federal employees and contractors.
Mm-hmm. His executive order number 2 was to rejoin the World Health Organization. It was reversal of the Trump order. Biden canceled Trump's move to withdraw the country from the World Health Organization in an early show of commitment to the global health body. Sent infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci to speak at the WHO's virtual board meeting Thursday morning.
Executive Order 3, set up a COVID office that reported directly to Joe Biden. He reversed the Trump order. Biden created a White House COVID-19 response team led by Jeff Zients that will coordinate across the federal government and states on ramping up vaccinations, distributing more masks and gloves, expanding testing capacity, reopening schools and more. This order also reestablished the National Security Council's Directorate for Global Health Security and Biodefense, an office disbanded by the Trump administration during the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. An executive order number 4 was export closure and eviction moratoriums. Biden directed key agencies, including the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Department of Veteran Affairs, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the Federal Housing Finance Agency to extend the current pause on federal evictions and foreclosures through at least the end of March.
Executive Order number 5. He froze student debt collection. Biden is immediately directing the Education Department to continue to freeze monthly payments and interest on federal student loans until at least September 30th.
Mm-hmm. Number 6, rejoin the Paris Climate Accords. This is also reversal of Trump order. Biden signed an order to rejoin the Paris Climate Accords that President Trump exited last year, sending the United Nations a document that will make the United States party to the agreement in 30 days. The international pact aims to push all countries to slash their greenhouse gas emissions.
Executive Order 7, revoke the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline and cancel other Trump administration energy rules. This was another reversal of Trump order. Biden revoked the presidential permit for the $8 billion Keystone XL pipeline that would have transported fossil fuels from Canada across the United States, a project climate activists has protested for years. The order also directs federal agencies to start reversing and revising other Trump administration rules, including restoring protections and banning drilling in several national parks and national monuments and setting strict emissions and fuel economy standards for vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Executive Order number 8, nix the 1776 Commission. This is also a reversal of Trump order. Biden terminated the Trump administration's 1776 commission, a project promoting a more conservative history curriculum in U.S. schools that existed for only a few months. The group released a report on Martin Luther King Jr. Day that contained several inaccuracies and paragraphs lifted from other published works. This executive order also directs all federal agencies to create an action plan within 200 days to address unequal barriers to opportunity in agency policies and programs. It also undoes the Trump administration's policy that prohibited federal contractors and some grant recipients that conduct any form of race or sex stereotyping, including diversity training.
Executive Order 9, unwind Trump's charges to the census, changes to the census, I beg your pardon. Biden signed an order revoking the Trump administration's effort to exclude undocumented immigrants from the U.S. Census, a change that would have weakened federal representation for diverse areas generally represented by Democrats. The order also ensures that census takers have enough time to obtain an accurate account of the population, reversing the Trump administration's move to cut the work short.
Executive Order Number 10, strengthen legal protections for Dreamers. This is also a reversal of Trump order. Biden directed the Secretary of Homeland Security in consultation with the Attorney General to take actions to shore up the Obama-era deferred action for childhood arrivals, and that's DACA, DACA program that shielded hundreds of thousands of young immigrants from deportation. The Trump administration tried to abolish the program, but was stopped by federal courts.
Executive Order 11, abolish the Muslim ban. Biden got rid of the Trump administration's ban on people from several majority Muslim countries entering the United States, a policy the new administration blasted as rooted in religious animus and xenophobia. The order also instructs the State Department to restart visa processing for the countries affected by the ban.
Number 12, cancel the Trump administration's interior enforcement rule. Biden revoked a Trump executive order that massively expanded immigration officials' interior enforcement work and broadened the categories of who they should try to detain and deport. His acting DHS secretary then issued a memo pausing deportations for 100 days beginning on January 22nd.
Executive Order 13, halt construction of the U.S.-Mexico border wall, a reversal of Trump order. Biden declared an immediate termination of the National Emergency Declaration that the Trump administration used to divert federal funding to building the U.S.-Mexico border wall, and ordered a pause on its construction while the new administration reviews the funding and contracts.
Number 14, extend deportation protections for
Liberians.
Let's see. Biden signed an executive order extending the Deferred Enforced Department, DED, designation for Liberians who have been in the United States for many years until June 30, 2022, shielding them from deportation and extending their work authorization until then. Trump had threatened to terminate the program, which would have put the status of about 4,000 Liberians in jeopardy. Oh, Liberians. Mm-hmm. Oh, that word got me. Okay, go.
Yes. Executive Order 15, ban workplace discrimination against LGBT employees. Biden signed an executive order making it clear that his administration interprets the Civil Rights Act of 1964 as prohibiting workplace discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. The order also directs federal agencies to make sure existing laws banning sex discrimination also prohibit discrimination against gay, bisexual, and transgender workers.
Mm-hmm. Executive Order 16, implement an ethics pledge for all executive branch officials. Biden signed an ethics pledge and ordered every appointee in the executive branch to do so as well. The pledges cover both a ban on political interference with the Justice Department and a ban on all officials using their office for their own personal gain.
Executive Order 17, freeze Trump's midnight regulations. Biden sent an order that will freeze all Trump administration's regulations currently in process, blocking them from taking effect while the new administration reviews them. So in, you know, the first, you know, 17 days, that's what Joe Biden did in executive orders.
Yeah.
And, you know, he rolled back some of Trump's, you know, nefarious executive orders that were hateful against people, against minorities, against immigrants, especially the Muslim ban. That was so, you know, xenophobic. You know, not all Muslims or not all Arabs are terrorists, you know, just like, you know, the sexual discrimination at LGBTQ, you know. You could have get away with that back in probably before Jim Crow days, because, you know, the American populace was so dark and ignorant. But no, you know, it's freedom for all. Why the discrimination? This is how Republicans and right-wingers usually get by, discriminating and trying to, like, beat down other people. You know, and is there a way or the highway? And that's not going to fly in this day and age. This is 21st century America. And while the world changed, Donald Trump tried to roll back to the 1920s and even before that. So, you know, we're not going to accept, you know, policies like that. And Joe Biden did the right thing in those executive orders. We'll have two callers on the line now. And, you know, we're going to talk about this what we just read. And also, you know, Bidenomics. Do you think Bidenomics is working? Because Joe Biden is playing a long game. He's not short, you know, short expediency where, you know, it's just a quick fix. It's a long-term thing, a long-term approach in terms of economics, in terms of getting jobs for American workers. He's bringing manufacturing back, you know, all those good things. And, you know, compared to Trump, you know, Trump didn't do much in terms of helping the middle class and working poor. What he did was, you know, give a $7 trillion tax cut to the wealthy who don't need it, because most of them pay no taxes, you know, so good for Joe Biden. Okay, and let me see, take this first call here. Darcy calling in. Hello, welcome to the show. What's cooking? 810-810 era code. Welcome to the show. What's cooking?
Hi. You can say hello.
Hi.
Don't be afraid.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
I guess that person will have to listen. No problem.
Okay.
Very, very interesting.
Calling in from Michigan.
Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Welcome.
Oh. Okay. I was listening to both of you folks. You did a great job in explaining what Biden has done. And I would just like to give some good news. Rachel Maddow had quite a lengthy discussion on why MSNBC should not hire Ronna Romney McDaniel. In fact, all day, all of the different speakers, show hosts, and reporters have given their dismay that this is against democracy. It has nothing to do with free press. It's against democracy to deny a legitimate election. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not attached to a train this time. I'm really happy.
Oh yeah, I was so mad over the weekend. I emailed. I went on their Facebook page, and I also called and left a message. I agree with Rachel. I agree with Joyce. I agree with Chris Hayes. All of them, because absolutely, this Rona McDaniel was an election denier to begin with. And, mm-hmm. you know, she was interviewed on, I think, Meet the Press, and she basically did say that she said what she said because she was being paid to say it. So what that told me is that the only she can be bought up. That's the only type of character that she has, is she can be bought off. And to say whatever she's told to say. So she really doesn't have any love for the country or democracy. So if they decide to keep her, I think MSNBC and NBC are going to suffer dramatically. And I think
I don't think so, because I think that, as Rachel put it, that mm-hmm. when the staff, the whole mm-hmm. staff, found
yeah.
out, they
mm-hmm.
gave their truthful reasons that
mm-hmm.
hiring her would be against democracy and the free press of telling the truth.
Yes, absolutely. And
Romney, and I'm going to keep saying her maiden name, Ronna
mm-hmm.
Romney McDonald, or McDaniels, whatever it is. She was part of the people signing the documents that were going to say that Trump won the election and Joe Biden didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's ahead of the Republican. She was ahead of the Republican National Committee, and to
mm-hmm.
do that is against the law.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody down there at MSNBC is a pretty stand-up crowd. I don't agree with all of them all the time, but this is part of, you don't agree with everybody all the time. But this has
mm-hmm.
been about the fairest station that we have around, or the fairest people we have around.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
think they brought out things like I just brought out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they have integrity. I think they work hard, to get out the truth. They barely ever put anything on, when Trump is talking. So they have basically made a pledge to the American people that they're trying to save our democracy. And, you know, for this, I think he is the vice president, if I remember right, and I don't remember his name, but I mean, what was he trying to do? I mean, I don't understand what the reason is. NBC and MSNBC are doing well, and I believe that they are, why did he throw a monkey wrench into it? That's what I don't understand.
Reason?
I don't know, I'll tell you, it sure didn't help Ronna Romney McDaniel's reputation. I think she has really been exposed now.
Mm-hmm. No, it didn't.
So sometimes life is kind of funny with karma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think karma got her.
I hope so. David, what do you think?
I took a job at this. Romney, Rona, whatever her name is, Romney McDaniel, I guess the one to attract Trump voters to MSNBC. That's why they hired her. Maybe the one to attract independent voters. You know, who knows? But I guess without any controversy, then there's no viewership. And, you know, with her being the former RNC chair, you know, they were trying to attract new people to the station, and it backfired spectacularly. That's just my two cents in it, really. That's how I interpret it.
You may be right. Former chairman of the Republican Party, his name escapes me right now, the distinguished brown gentleman. Good God.
Michael
I can't
Steele?
Pardon?
Are you talking about Michael Steele?
Yeah, Michael Steele. He was making comments about it, too.
Of course he was. Mm-hmm. Michael Steele is...
Michael Steele is an honest man.
Yes, he is. He's upstanding. He's awesome.
And he even made the remark that very similar to what I made. We don't always agree, but the thing is, we tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps stressing that. We tell the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And according to Rachel, that, you know, she's pretty sure that they're going to be listened to. So let's see what shakes out.
I was under the impression that because of all the backfire that they did not hire her. But I guess they did hire her, and now they're going to have to fire her.
No,
so
they'll just ask her to keep on walking. You know, these boots are made for walking.
Yep, I agree. I saw the interview, or clips of the interview, when she was on yesterday. I think it was Sunday morning.
Meet the Press.
Was not impressed. Yeah, Meet the Press, yeah.
She was quite cocky, wasn't she?
Well, she was, like I said, she basically said, she said what she said because she was paid to say what she said. And that told me everything about her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How can
mm-hmm.
you be paid to say what she said about Trump when she that is supposed to be a volunteer job?
Yeah. Well,
so what the hell is she talking about?
Well, you know.
Does she think that just because she's got money, the rest of us out here are stupid?
Yeah, of course she does. Mm. They all do. We're not stupid, and we're not liars. We tell the truth, and we pay attention to what we're reading and saying and our sources, et cetera. So,
and if she was paid to say what she said, then shame on her. Then she can be bought. On a volunteer job.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Being the head of the Republican Party or the Democratic Party is a volunteer job.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But I'm just saying, I'm sure she was paid by who knows who to say what she said, you know, through the years.
Well,
so
maybe now she should be investigated. Who paid her?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
We'll have a caller from Port Huron, or is it Flint? Darcy calling in from Michigan. Hello, Darcy. Welcome to the show. What's cooking? I guess you're still now. I guess you'd rather listen. Yeah,
okay.
Okay, next on the agenda tonight then is, you know, the 23 of the greatest accomplishments by Joe Biden as president of the United States. He passed a $1.2 billion bipartisan infrastructure package to increase investments in a national network of bridges, roads, airports, public transport, and national broadband internet, as well as waterways and energy system. Donald Trump in his 4 years tried to pass an infrastructure bill, and it got nowhere because they couldn't agree on anything. And Republicans put a lot of pork in the bills that, you know, wanted, you know, in that their infrastructure bill. And so it wasn't passed in the House. It failed miserably. So it took Joe Biden, you know, his finesse in his years in politics to, you know, get the job done. So good for him.
You know, just one thing about the infrastructure package. You know, people are saying that, you know, they really don't know I think a lot of people do not understand or just don't know all the things that Biden has put into place, like the infrastructure package. Like you said, David, it's a long game. You know, people are not seeing the results or feeling the results because, his infrastructure package, that takes time. You know, it takes time to build bridges and roads and, you know, fix the airports and public transportation, the broadband internet, the waterways, mm-hmm. the energy. Those are not fixed in a day. They're not fixed in a mm-hmm. year. You know, it's going to take more time. So it's a long game. And so people mm-hmm. don't think that instant gratification from it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So it does not click with them. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't mm-hmm. click with them. So number two
also too that when George W. Bush was president, a lot of bridges mm-hmm. were collapsing, killing people. You know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And broadband internet, the rural people weren't getting information quickly. You know, rural people usually listen to Fox News and everything. So now a lot more rural people getting broadband, helping mm-hmm. with education, helping getting information from different sources besides Fox News and right-wing media.
Yeah.
And airports need restructuring. That's mm-hmm. there. Roads.
Yeah. I mean,
and transport, public transport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and Pete Buttigieg has been all over the country, promoting this bipartisan infrastructure package. I mean, he's been everywhere. Mm-hmm. I've never really paid attention to, the transportation secretary, but he is out there and he's talking to people. He goes onto the jobs and, he's part of it. And that, mm-hmm. people, attention, they would see that, but everything takes time. So let's go on to the next one. Number two is helped get more than 500 million life-saving COVID-19 vaccines in the arms of Americans through the American Rescue Plan.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing because when you compare it to what Trump did, Trump encouraged people to take horse pills, the horse dewormers. A couple of them mm-hmm. got killed. What Trump did also is tell them to inject themselves with bleach.
I know.
And other crap.
I won't, as long as I live.
Biden administration was proactive in helping people, really helping people with vaccinations and everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Trump also said, people should get out in the sunshine more. Because mm-hmm. I guess the heat and the hot weather will kill COVID-19, which is just a load of crap,
Yes,
so,
And people that have family members that were sick and in the hospital and, mm-hmm. dying from not being able to breathe and being incubated and such, mm-hmm. Try to tell mm-hmm. them to, take a shot of chlorine. Really?
Mm-hmm.
How ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And some people they said goodbye to their family members through a glass,
Yes, through the phone.
Because Donald Trump and the Trump administration was not proactive enough,
No.
Fauci gave them advice. They didn't listen. They listened to that other doctor lady. Can't remember her name right now.
Yeah.
The crazy one. And she was just, lock, stock, and barrel with Trump. Knowing better, mm-hmm. and Fauci was giving them information, and they just refused to take it, So a lot of people died unnecessarily, and when reporters called out Trump on it, he was rude and obnoxious and disrespectful to them, as usual, I mean, he's not a good person. He should never have been in the White House to begin with. But we'll make sure this 2024 November, he won't be able to go back in the White House. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
because he's proven what he's made of. He's proven that he's incompetent. He's
mm-hmm.
proven that he's not a good businessman. He's proven many things. And he's a dud. You know, he's an embarrassment to the United States. So the third thing that Joe Biden did, he stopped a 30-year streak on federal inaction on gun violence by signing the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act that created enhanced background checks, closed the boyfriend loophole, and provided funds for youth mental health. So the boyfriend loophole is basically if you're in a in a relationship and it's violent and the woman get beat up and everything, and a person like that don't have any business having a gun, you know, that privilege is gone because, you know, the abuse and everything, the physical abuse and assault and everything. And the enhanced background check, red flag laws, which some states in the South, you know, has overridden the federal executive order, which, you know, for the life of me, I can't imagine, you know, a state overriding a federal law, signing to executive order by the President of the United States. You know, so it was the first time in 30 years because Republicans refused to do anything because they're beholden to the NRA who fund their campaigns with millions of dollars. It's been happening since the 1960s till now. And it's just, you know, greed, and it's dreadful, you know, that NRA, which so little members, 3 million people, if I remember correctly, and they have so much power because of money.
Absolutely. Let's go on to number $369 billion investment in climate change, the largest in American history through the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022.
Number five, ended the largest war in American history by pulling the troops out of Afghanistan for 20 years. We're in Afghanistan trying to rebuild Afghanistan. And the withdrawal process happened during the Trump administration, but because it was a smooth transition from leaving Afghanistan, you know, people blame Joe Biden and his administration for botching it, which he didn't, because the pullout of Afghanistan after 20 years and $1 trillion in taxpayer money going towards this war, Joe Biden did the best he could, any human being could. And, you know, certain things didn't go through smoothly, but it's human, you know, and, you know, for them to say that Joe Biden cowered and ran away is disingenuous because the pullout started during the Trump administration, you know. So as usual, Republicans lie and twist things up to make Democrats look bad, and they started the withdrawal, so it wasn't Biden. It was just following through on what the Trump administration started doing.
Number six, provided $10,000 to $20,000 in college debt relief to Americans with loans who made under $125,000 a year. But the Supreme Court, however, the administration has announced a new plan to forgive billions in the loans that were qualified under special programs, but not due to the DOE mismanagement in previous years. We have to read the article above, which I don't see the article above.
Yeah, so basically 2 days ago, Joe Biden, the latest move on that, is $6 billion in student loans. You know, so people like Betsy DeVos, who are, you know, are like vultures, basically, with these student loans. When student loans have to be paid back, you know, the interest rates on it is ridiculous. You know, and so Joe Biden is stamping out all that, or trying to. $6 billion is a good thing.
I think this is the third, time he's done it, if I remember right. It's either the second or third time. So, which is a good thing. It's helping people. It's helping people get out of, you know, student debt so they can, you know, maybe buy a car or pay their rent, you know, reach.
And there was the biggest, and the DEO DOE, the Department of Education Risk Management, you know, Betsy DeVos as education secretary. She was out of her depth, out of her league, and she had no business being education secretary.
No.
You know? So number seven.
The only thing she wanted to do, the only thing she wanted to do was have charter schools. That's what was her goal in life. And, you know, we don't want that. Go ahead.
Yeah, number seven, cut child poverty in half through the American Rescue Plan.
Which is a good thing. School lunches and, you know, that's a good thing. Number eight, capped prescription drug prices at $2,000 per year for seniors on Medicare through the Inflation Reduction Act. That's a good thing.
Yeah, he fought tooth and nail for that as well. And Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema are trying to put a wrench in there to play a kingmaker. And it flopped, you know. It blew up in their faces and everything. So it was finally passed in the Senate. And, you know, no opposition in the House. They're voting against something like that where it would help elderly people, you know. They'd be voted out so fast if that they'll try to do that. So number nine, passed a COVID relief deal that provided payments up to $1,400 to many struggling U.S. citizens while supporting renters and increased unemployment benefits. And
number
was that
10.
A one-time payment of $1,400? Yes, it was.
I think, you know, like if a household, you know, 1400, yes, if I remember right. Number 10, achieved historically low unemployment rates after the pandemic caused them to skyrocket. So, everyone was out of work. You know, businesses moving down, especially the little guys that, you know, only had a couple employees. You know, if it was a small restaurant, people weren't going out to eat at that time. And, you know, so, yeah, it hurt a lot of people.
The mom and pop stores, you know, that's been there for years and everything, couldn't compete with Walmart and whomever else. You know, so it's a good thing that Joe Biden did that and everything.
That's when Mitch McConnell said we were all out partying.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell had the nerve to say that, you know, when we got such a deal that people are out partying and what have you, which is a lie, you know. Mitch McConnell can always talk and everything. You know, he thought it was free money and socialism, getting that $1,400. He doesn't know what he's talking about, as usual, so...
He would probably take the $1,400 in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
But he didn't need to pay his utilities.
So, you know, he should go to hell, basically. Number 11, impose a 15% minimum corporate tax on some of the largest corporations in the country, ensuring that they pay their fair share of taxes as part of the Historic Inflation Reduction Act.
Well, recommitted America to the global fight against climate change by rejoining the Paris Agreement, which was an awesome thing to do.
Number 13, strengthen the NATO alliance in support of Ukraine after the Russian invasion by endorsing the inclusion of world military powers, Sweden and Finland. Because, as you know, Sweden and Finland... to share a border with Russia, and Russia was threatening to invade them, and they're now part of NATO. So, if Russia dare attack them, then good luck to Russia, because you know NATO would be up their asses in no time. You know, so who you think next is on the chopping block for Russia? You know, hopefully the war will succeed in Ukraine, but do you think the Baltic states are in jeopardy? And do you think, you know, Poland could be next?
I think Poland. They came really close over the weekend. For some reason, I think that's what his threat is. 14,
authorized the assassination of al-Qaeda terrorist Ayman al-Zawahiri. He became head of the organization after the death of Osama bin Laden.
Yes. That was a good thing. Number 15,
yep.
Give Medicare the power to negotiate prescription drug prices through the Inflation Reduction Act while also reducing government health spending.
Held Putin accountable for the invasion of Ukraine by imposing stiff economic sanctions.
Number 17, boosted the budget of the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, by nearly $8 billion to reduce tax evasion and increase revenue. As you know, corporations and individual wealthy people refuse to pay taxes, you know. So with more IRS agents out there, they'll be able to go after the tax cheats. And with increased revenue, they can, you know, get you know, things that are needed in helping to catch these offshore bankers and these tax cheats. So that's a good thing.
You know, everyone paid their fair share, and we know that the middle class, people up to $400,000 that make up to $400,000 do pay their fair share. But, you know, billionaires and the, you know, the billionaires and the corporations are not paying their fair share. And they have said that if they did pay their fair share, we would not have a deficit. You know, we wouldn't have to have a budget all the time. So that's kind of sad. President Biden created more jobs in 1 year, 6.6 million, than any other president in U.S. history.
Number 19, reduce health care premiums under the Affordable Care Act by $800 a year as part of the American Rescue Plan.
Yeah,
so Republicans trying to get rid of Obamacare and a fail.
Yeah.
I think they tried three times and a fail. And, you know, if they get rid of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, what do they have in place to replace it? Nothing. So why get rid of a system that's working? And more and more people enrolling. This is the 14th anniversary was a couple of years back. You know, Republicans, like I said, can't govern. They just go off the fears of people and try to scare people. And they don't have a backup plan. These people are out of their minds.
Yeah. I think they've tried to repeal it about 40 to 50 times already. So that's crazy. And they're not, like you said, they do not have anything to replace it with. They don't plan on replacing it with anything because they don't care. And yet they'll complain about people, you know, being on Medicare, you know, Medicaid, and, you know, that would be costing the government. It's just a bunch of, you know, baloney, you know.
And then Trump instructed Republicans not to put on their websites, .gov, when enrollments were, but people got around that and they're still enrolled. So, you know, it blew up in Trump's face. Okay, so
to address service members' exposure to burn pits and other toxins. I remember that one.
And it's near and dear to his heart because his son, Bo, died of brain cancer.
Yeah.
And one of the suspected causes of it was burn pits. You know, so, and toxins that happen. Number 21, sign the CHIPS and Science Act to strengthen American manufacturing and innovation. You know, since the 1940s, we haven't been innovative enough. You know, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, what's the movie name again? Oppenheimer. You know, back in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, we're creative, we're good in science, we're good in math, we're good in reading, we're good in all these things. But, you know, slowly but surely, it just went to hell, you know? We're more of a consumer than innovators and everything. And, you know, Joe Biden is trying to bring that back, the innovation and science
and in manufacturing. He's brought more manufacturing jobs than arguably any U.S. president in history.
Yep. They reauthorized the Violence Against Women Act through 2027, mm-hmm. which is a good thing mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
Trump would have never done that in a million years.
Yeah.
And
even though Barack Obama tried, the Republicans voted against renewing the Violence Against Women Act. Why does something
yep.
like that have an expiration date? It should be forever, basically.
Yes, it should be, but that's how they do things in Washington.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, there will still be women in 2028,
mm-hmm.
being, abused. So it mm-hmm. really makes no sense. I don't know why they put an expiration date on that. But
yeah.
they did.
They mm-hmm. did that with the gun bill when Biden was in, before he became vice president. There was a 10-year
mm-hmm.
high, military, whatever type guns, the high type guns,
mm-hmm.
and there was a decrease in death,
mm-hmm.
And the Republicans were in control. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The last one, David.
Yes, ma'am. And the last one, number 23, he halted all federal executions after the previous administration reinstated them after a 17-year freeze. Because, these executions, some of them will have DNA evidence exonerating the person who was accused of murder or rape or whatever.
Right.
But yet
right.
still, Donald Trump is such a glutton for watching people suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They killed 42 people who were exonerated through DNA, especially in Texas, those freaks in Texas,
mm-hmm.
42 people should be out in prison, but no, they still went through the death penalty. And all of these 42 people were in red states. So how can you call yourself pro-life, but yet still you're so, salivating for the death penalty? It's ridiculous. These people are ridiculous. Eric, calling in from
mm-hmm.
Michigan. Hello.
Hi, Eric.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Good.
How are you? How was Chicago? I heard you went to Chicago.
So right quick. I went out there for a horror film convention. It was really fun. Made some friends there. Gained a few followers,
mm-hmm.
subscribers. Let me see. Is Elaine here? Good to hear from you. Is Susie or anybody
here.
Else here?
Susie's not here tonight.
Here.
No. Doris is here.
I'm sorry. Who's here?
Doris.
Doris.
She lives in Flint.
Doris.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, I have a good list of accomplishments right here from the Biden-Harris administration. And before
mm-hmm.
I dive into that, I just want to say right quick, I know that the last few shows I had missed, to those of you who are just listening to this, I'm occasional co-host of the show, delegate,
mm-hmm.
trustee, and activist from the Democratic Party in Michigan. And I wanted to impose a rule with this show, which is, they had kind of beat me to it, but, we had people on the show who are right-wingers, Trump supporters, and I guess they're not here anymore. I guess they've not allowed them to come here anymore, but I'll say, if by any chance somebody who's a Trumper happens to call into the show, we're going to keep the conversation on track. If there are legitimate reasons why you're supporting him or whatever it is you think he's accomplished, lay that out in whatever detail you can without just jumping to, well, here's why I don't like Biden, here's why I didn't like Hillary, here's why I didn't like Obama,
mm-hmm.
whatever. We're trying to keep it on mm-hmm. track right here. We're trying to keep things intelligent and educated
mm-hmm.
here.
Eric, you would have been proud of us last night because we had two of them call in, Rich and Joe. And I kept my cool until – how long did we have them on the line, David? Do you remember?
A good 20 minutes at least.
Yeah. So everything was going pretty smooth. Their ideas are really out there, but pretty smooth. And then they started on the immigration again. And I had just had that conversation. We had just had that conversation with them a couple of weeks ago and got into it. And I thought, no, we're not doing this again. Because what they do, Eric, is they gaslight. You know what I'm saying? And they already know our position. And they already know how we feel. So they just like to gaslight. And that's when we said, okay, bye, see you. But at least we got about 20 minutes in, and we were civil.
Okay. Well, like I said, everybody can do what they do. So, yeah, here's what I want to go into as well. Again, anybody who wants to reach out to me, all of my information is available on both my Facebook and YouTube pages, Twitter, Instagram, 500, YouTube channel. It's my name, Eric Brantley, E-R-I-K-B-R-A-N-T-L-E-Y, Twitter, at Eric Brantley 1. And as far as the list of achievements from the Biden-Harris administration, and I'm really, really pushing all Democrats.
Did you hear us go through, just go through a bunch of them?
Yeah, you did go through some, and I just kind of want to go over the list again because I might have some here. I called in not too long ago, so I'm here to throw some in there in case you might have missed some. I'm sure you've already listed some of them, some of the ones that I'm looking at right here that I had put on my page a while ago. And I wish more people had seen it and liked it and shared it and whatnot. So you've already covered, okay, the American Rescue Plan Act, cut $1,500 stimulus check, increased the child tax credit up to $3,600 per child, expanded unemployment benefits, passed the COVID relief package, provided over $300 billion to small businesses, $15 an hour to federal workers and contractors, over $500 million invested into HBCUs, which in turn helped a lot of Black students pay off their debts or at least reduce their debts. He reduced the medical debt from $200 billion to $88 billion, which helped over 8.2 million Americans. The student debt reduction helped over 44 million Americans, massively reduced the drone war, put a pause on the weapons deal that the U.S. had with Saudi Arabia. Put us back in the World Health Organization, put us back in the Paris Climate Agreement. Brought back over 1 million jobs through the CHIPS Act, which you had mentioned that too. You've already mentioned the PACT Act, which gave health care to the veterans. He moved the overtime eligibility threshold from $35,000 a year to $55,000 a year. So to those of you who are unfamiliar with that, that just basically means that there was a previous rule instated that is if you make $35,000 a year and under, you're eligible for overtime pay. Biden moved that to $55,000. Which helped almost 4 million salaried workers. He moved marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. He expunged some marijuana-related charges and convictions. Over $20 billion had been provided from the administration to the Economic Injury Disaster Loans grants for low-income community-based businesses, provided over $284 billion for the Paycheck Protection Program. He went to Michigan to stand with the United Auto Workers, capped the cost of insulin at $35 a month, gave a pay raise to over 200,000 construction workers. The result of providing $64 billion to extending the Affordable Care Act stemmed from passing the Inflation Reduction Act, appointed the first Black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court, enrolled over 16 million Americans back onto the ACA, and gave Medicare the allowance to negotiate lower drug prices. All of these things, or most of these things, if not all these things, most, if not all, Republicans voted against these things. And for anybody out there, for anybody out there who is still conflicted, or on who to vote for, or undecided, or in the middle, or you think the two parties are the same, well, just know that the reason we got those things is because this is what Democrats gave us. This is what our Democratic Congress people and Democratic senators have legislated. It went to the offices of Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, who passed that. Democratic senators, Bernie Sanders, Ed Markey, all these people helped get it through. And, of course, our Democratic president and vice president passed it when they got to their desk. And so, again, and, you know, my message to CNN, MSNBC, NBC, CBS, ABC, and all the major Democrat outlets, New York Times, L.A., this is what they should be pushing, and this is what we all should be pushing. And when people come onto the show to debate about Biden and Trump, this is the things that you have to lay out.
Eric, can I ask you something, please?
Go right ahead.
Okay. I've been trying to find out the information, and I can't seem to find it. I've had a couple Teamsters tell me that Joe Biden saved their pension. Can you find out how he went about it so that I can start talking to different union people?
So they're saying that he saved pensions for union workers?
Yes, for the Teamsters. Something happened where they were losing their pensions, and Biden did something and saved their pensions.
Okay, so here's what I found right here. This is according to AP News, Washington. President Joe Biden's administration announced the infusion of nearly $36 billion to shore up a financially troubled union pension plan, preventing severe cuts to the retirement incomes of about 350,000 Teamster workers and retirees across the U.S. Okay, so there's that too, and it's a good thing you brought that up because I actually don't even think I knew that part at first.
Can you send that to me so that I can read it over and it will be fluent when I talk to people? Can you?
I was going to say the same thing.
As a matter of fact, I'm sending it over right now. You came to the right person.
Okay.
There's one of them I see right there, and if I see any other articles that kind of go more into that, then yes, I'll do that too. We also have to remind people that, again, I know that this isn't about just – and this is what my criticism is with, like, CNN and MSNBC is that obviously we're on the right page as far as being anti-Republican and anti-Trump, but sometimes I have a problem with the way they're going about it because it's only – like I said on the show before, it's only about the indictments, the charges, the legal – controversies and scandals, the E. Jean Carroll and the fraud case and all this. But unfortunately, we're stuck in a country where too many of those people are still not caring about that. As a matter of fact, I just saw a young Trump supporter on the Young Turks who literally just said in his own words that Trump could go into a Walgreens and steal something and he would still vote for him. He doesn't care if he gets convicted. And there's a number of people that unfortunately they're seeing that, and it's kind of influencing people in a way, which is why I have to remind Democrats to hit them with this, to hit the media with, remind the things that happened under the Trump presidency, under his politics, under his White House. There were over 200,000. We have to remember, people who complained about the job loss, which we've had job loss under every president. Under Obama, there were over 88,000 jobs, 87,000 to 88,000 jobs that were outsourced in 8 years. Under Trump, there were over 212,000 jobs that were outsourced there. Let's remind people, he ran as an anti-outsourcing candidate, and he ran on this is bad under Obama because he outsourced when he did three times that. And so we have to keep reminding and telling people, it's not just about going after him because he's being indicted left and right, because of the nasty things that he says on a daily basis, because of the racial comments, because of the sexist comments or bigotry or xenophobia or the January 6th. It's about you have to take all those in and add that with here's the things that he said during his first campaign in 2016 and how he riled up the division. Here's what took place under his presidency, and not just him. He claimed to be anti-war, yet a lot of the people that he put in the departments of the Secretary of Defense, the national security advisors, the attorney generals like William Barr and Jeff Sessions and Mike Pompeo and Rex Tillerson and John Bolton, he's putting some of the most pro-war war hawks in there.
Yeah.
And while he claims to want to protect education, then he puts somebody like Betsy DeVos in charge of the public education department, who is actively against public education. He said he wanted to protect the Department of the Treasury. Well, then he appoints somebody like Steve Mnuchin, who went there to attempt to raid the Treasury. Somebody like Scott Pruitt, who sued the EPA a couple times before he got appointed. Trump says, and his people, oh, let's protect the EPA. We have to remind people that everything that he said during his campaign trail, he's going back on that, and it's all just rhetoric. And so everything that he said, or at least most things he said, he's hiring people into those positions that actively go against those things, which means that he is not in this in an attempt to drain the swamp. He's in that to do exactly what Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and the Bushes did to shore up the swamp. That's what I think we should be going about. Elaine, what do you think of that take?
I think it's terrific because of the fact people vote their own special interests. They're not like us activists that we look at the total picture.
You know, a lot of people, Eric, we have to remember, a lot of people are one issue voters. And I was talking to an old friend about a week or so ago. And all of a sudden, I don't even know, we start talking about the world and just things that are going on. And she said, I don't know anything that's going on. She said, I have not watched the news in so long. She says, I can't comment on anything. And I said to her, I said, well, I said, if there's any time in your life right now
that you, I said to her, you know, this is what I basically said, if there's any time in your, any time that you should be paying attention, because our democracy is on the line, this is the year you should be paying attention. And I said, are you pro-choice? Are you, you know, are you not pro-choice? And she said, I'm pro-choice. And I said, well, then I know that you're a Republican. I said, but, you know, Republicans are not pro-choice. So would you be a one-issue voter and take that issue and vote Democrat just to help women, you know, become, have their rights brought, you know, have their rights back, you know? And she said, yeah, maybe I will do that. So that's maybe another way that we can get people to understand that even one issue, because I don't know any issues on the Republican side that I would vote for. But if there's one issue on the, you know, on, if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, and there's the pro-choice issue, or, you know, whatever issue it is that's bothering you, you know, that you don't agree with, maybe we could get people to vote Democrat that way. You know, so, you know,
well, you know what, and I think that's a good point too. And then here's another thing that we have to remember too is that, and I'm not saying that every single Republican congressperson and senator does this, but and I'm right now I'm trying to look for the bill that she. There's a Republican congresswoman by the name of Maria Salazar, and I forget what state
in
she's
Florida.
In. Okay, she's in Florida.
Florida.
Okay, she's
Florida.
In Florida.
Miami.
So, right, Florida. And so here's what we have to remember, and I've seen other congresspeople and senators do this. Here's another thing that we have to remind undecided and independent voters about. Why are a lot of these congresspeople and senators taking credit for bills and pieces of legislation that they voted against? And why are they saying one thing about a particular issue, and then when it's brought up, they go against it? We have to. Here's the primary example that I always use. The primary example is Marjorie Greene standing in front of the Congress a couple of years ago talking about the issue of the shortage of baby formula.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? There's a bill that's brought up in Congress that funds money into bringing and providing more baby formula.
Mm-hmm.
She votes against it. There's also this bill that Maria Salazar voted against, and the money went into funding her district, which helped a lot of her constituents, turns around and takes credit for it. We have to be standing in the faces of these Republican officials and also standing in the faces of the people who voted for those officials and saying, this money went to your district and it helps you. Your congressperson and your senator voted against it, but they take credit for it. Why do you think that is? Maybe it's because at heart they realize that this is a good thing, but they're not going to go on Fox News or Newsmax or some right-wing media and say that because they know that's going to lose with a lot of their party. This is, again, you have these things because the Democrats gave it to you. And here's the last example I want to bring up. The most common example I would bring is the American Rescue Plan Act. Well, guess what? There is actually video that proves the American Rescue Plan Act was actually something that Trump had the opportunity to sign and pass. He actually had the opportunity to do that, but he reversed upon it. Why? Because he was listening to people like Mitch McConnell and Larry Kudlow and other establishment Republicans who told him that it wasn't a good idea to pass it. And guess what? He didn't do it. And this took place in October of 2020, a month before the election, which also costed him votes. When Biden got elected, that was one of his first few executive orders. He passed it, and guess what happened? As a result, people got $1,400 stimulus checks, and money was invested into places like the Paycheck Protection Program, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Administration, and a lot of small business administrations, a lot of which were owned by people of color, by the way. I said, if I'm talking to anybody who's undecided, who benefited from that, I'm here to remind them, you got this stuff because Democrats passed it and Republicans voted against it. The last president had the opportunity to pass it. He did it. That's what we should be pushing on people. Elaine, what do you think of that?
I think it's wonderful. That's why I asked you about the Teamster thing. I had a Teamster man tell me that he was going to be voting for Biden because he saved his pension, but I wanted to be able to repeat it again to somebody else that would be union. Yeah.
And
so
well, you know what? You know what? Once I read more about it, I will talk about it in an upcoming video.
Yeah.
So the next thing.
And I have a clip. I have a clip here with Jim DeFede from CBS Florida, Channel 2, speaking and calling out Maria Salazar, Congresswoman from Miami. And we're going to talk about Kamala Harris being in Waukesha, Wisconsin recently. And she talked about women's rights and everything. And this is a 2-minute clip. This is Facing South Florida from CBS Miami. Jim DeFede, the interviewer, to Representative Congresswoman Maria Salazar.
Former President Trump moved towards securing the Republican nomination. There are still a few Republican members of Congress who have been holding off on endorsing him. CBS News Miami's Jim DeFede spoke to one of those members, South Florida Congresswoman Maria Elvira Salazar, to see where she stands regarding the former president.
Are you going to endorse Donald Trump?
I am going to, of course. I'm waiting to talk to him. And my issue is immigration, and they know it. And I am waiting to have a conversation with the president.
So let's talk about
because immigration is very important, and immigration is important for both parties, and both parties have done a dismal job when it comes to it.
So when you talk to Donald Trump, are you going to ask him what he meant when he said that illegal immigration is poisoning the blood of our nation? Do you agree with that? Is illegal immigration poisoning the blood of our nation?
Hey, my parents, I'm first-generation Cuban. My parents were political refugees. I don't think so, but I do know that what we're having right now at the border cannot happen. You cannot have 8 million undocumented that really do not know who those people are coming into the country.
But the language,
it has to be orderly.
The language of poisoning the blood of our country. Are you troubled by that language?
I think those aren't the proper words to use, no.
Okay. In Iowa, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, or actually in Iowa, Donald Trump said, following the Eisenhower model, we will carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. Referring to the Eisenhower model.
And
do you know what the Eisenhower model was called?
1952, of course, but reality is, it was, I understand. But
Operation Wetback.
Listen. I understand that you want me to say that Trump is really bad for immigration, but let me tell you something. I am very upset with the Dems because the Democrats have had for 30 years the opportunity to do good to my community.
You can say more, Jim.
Yeah, so first of all, 8 million people have not crossed the border. That's garbage. Because New Mexico is a border state. And if 8 million people cross the border, then traffic jams and chaos would ensue. So that's rubbish right there, what she's talking about. And as Eric said, that she voted against everything, infrastructure, everything, but yet still she's collecting for her constituency, her district, and taking credit. It's so disgusting, and it's just foolishness, rubbish, absolute rubbish. You know, it's sickening that these people take credit for something they're voting against.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Here's what I want to say about that, because I just looked it up as that interview was playing. So here's my response. Was that Maria Salazar talking?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I want to say about that. I'm looking at the number of representatives in Florida with the state representatives as well as the state senators. The state House of Florida has 120 representatives, and 84 of those representatives are Republican. Now, I'm looking at the Florida Senate. They have 40 state senators, and 28 of them are Republican. They also have a Republican governor. They also have 2 Republican senators, and they have mostly Republican Congress people. And I'm looking right here, representatives, members of the state of Congress, of the United States Congress from Florida. And I can't see that number just right here. I'm willing to bet most of them are Republican. Here's the deal. Here's my response to Maria. My response is, Maria, you can sit there and say that you don't like the Democrats. You can call them socialists. You can call them communists. Conspiracy theory, the election was stolen, whatever you want to say, for you to sit there and say that this, that the Democrats are disappointing you because they haven't done well for your community. Look at the people who are running your state. You have 75 to 80% Republican representation in your state, maybe 85%. Florida is a pretty red state. And all the pieces of legislation that Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, and Chuck Schumer are bringing you, you and Marco Rubio and Rick Scott are voting against that. And Ron DeSantis, who may not be able to actually take a vote against Biden as far as legislation, the reason why the people in your community aren't getting the things in some cases is because your people are voting against that. And if, you know, and the reason the good things that have gone to Florida, it's because even though you voted against it, Democrats gave that to you. The reason why there were manufacturer jobs that went down to Florida is because of the CHIPS Act, which Joe Biden brought us that you voted against. And if I was talking to her, that's exactly what
woman,
I would say. And that's what somebody
vile,
needs to press her on.
And this
go
woman
ahead.
Is vile and a liar. She lied to immigrants. She constantly tore the party line. She had no man of her own. She's just annoying, her voice, you know. So kudos for Jim DeFede, who held her feet to the fire and held her accountable and everything. And she continued to take credit for bills that she voted against, like the Infrastructure Act, Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS Act. I hope people in Miami there vote out Maria Sellers there out of office this November because, you know, she can blame Dems all she wants. It's Republicans' fault, you know. You know, she tried to sidestep that issue in that 20-minute interview. And this, you know, should be watched by millions. She's despicable, you know?
Yep.
And she have the nerve to say, oh, I'm not trying to be a politician. I'm laughing and taking for credit for funds to her community gains by voting against it. You know, the media should call out Republicans like this, whether it's in Colorado, whether it's in California, whether whichever state, you know, because they've all voted against it. And why is the media not calling out these people who voted against it? Why? What are they afraid of? CNN, MSNBC. Well, Fox News is not really doing it because they're not a news organization. They're entertaining. You know, it's just disgusting.
Because, well, I know, right, David, this is my opinion. My opinion is that they are so busy talking about Trump 24/7, following him all around the country, putting him on the TV whenever they can with his big mouth, lying constantly, and everything else gets a lot of other news, you know, such as what you were just talking about, gets sidestepped because, you know, everything about his indictments, his court trials, his bonds, his money, his no money, his, you know, it's just disturbing on a daily basis. So that's why. And so how much more can your brain take? It'll explode, you know?
Well, you know what? Here's another thing I want to add right quick. Here's another thing I want to add because I just found it. The state of Florida has 28 U.S. congressional districts. So they have 28 congresspeople. 20 of them are Republican. Only 8 are Democrats. Which, again, is further proof that her rhetoric is nothing but BS by saying Democrats failed this state. Because you don't hardly have Democratic representation in your state. And guess what?
No.
If we had voted in Andrew Gillum as governor from 2018 and voted in some of these people to replace Rick Scott and Marco Rubio and at least 18 to 19 Republican out there, it would probably be a little better.
Lori.
Are they gerrymandered out there? Yes.
We did a good job. Lori and David, we did a good job a few days ago with those characters that called in. They turned the narrative around saying that Joe Biden has done nothing about immigration, and we set them straight. We're doing a good job on this program.
Yeah. I mean, how else can you do it? It's just so
good at turning the narrative around. And we didn't let them the other day. That's what they're cheesed off about. Eric, we've learned. Eric, we have learned.
Yeah.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, we've been civil with them. But, you know, when they try to overtake our show and, you know, the condescending and everything, then they have to go, you know. So I fired up Kamala Harris, became the Biden campaign's voice on some of the most central political issues. She was in Wisconsin.
Waukesha, Wisconsin recently. And the vice president, her role came into sharp focus this week as he took direct aim at former President Donald Trump over reproductive rights, and she laid the groundwork for a central Democratic message in the 2024 election and unveiling a more elevated role for Harris. Because, as you know, people saying that, oh, you know, she's been missing in action. This is like, you know, the most hidden vice president in history. But so the Biden campaign is using Vice President Harris to help mobilize voters on potentially one of the most political issues of 2024, reproductive rights, hoping to capitalize on our appeal to younger, more diverse voters. And the 2024 campaign is shaping up to be a political test for the vice president, who has fielded fierce criticism over the course of the Biden administration for her perceived low profile. Lori, you're saying something.
What I was saying is that she has been all over the country. She's been to many, many universities and has spoken, you know, about women's reproductive rights. That is her focus. And she's been, like I said, she's been all over the country going to all different campuses. So, and a lot of it is not, you know, the media or the press doesn't follow her around, you know, when she goes to every campus, but that's what she's been doing. And, you know, I kudos to her because it needs to be said. And she's targeting the right age group, I think, you know, by going to the colleges and talking about it. I think that's a good thing that she's doing.
And last Tuesday, she was speaking in Manassas, Virginia, and she was saying restore Roe. And first years of her tenure as vice president was marked by tough assignments that proved thankless. She took the lead in diplomacy with Central American nations to try and stem migration to the southern border. She took the lead on voting rights legislation, along with some high-profile stumbles. So CNN previously reported that Harris has made her unhappiness with some of her assignments known within the White House. And Harris is embracing her role as a key voice on reproductive rights, which is set to be a central issue for the Biden campaign as it hones its message ahead of November. And she's bringing a message to the campaign trail with a revamped energy that has been on full display in recent speeches. So the vice president has positioned herself to send the administration's message across the country in a week-long tour, drawing on the testimonials that underscore the impact of overturning Roe versus Wade. Because Donald Trump, as you know, he nominated three of the people who are now sitting on the Supreme Court. And according to these three people, they said that they wouldn't touch Roe versus Wade. And basically, they lied in the testimony. You know, the first chance they got, they voted to get rid of it. So they're liars. And, you know, what do you do in a case where, you know, somebody's appointed to life and, you know, there's no recall system, you know? So the vice president has been positioned, and her tour is built on what advisors and campaign officials viewed as a success of her college campus tours last year, as an extension of the dozens of meetings she's held with the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision. And as the Biden campaign plots in general election messaging, she's regularly hitting the former president for his role in the court's ruling. As you know, Donald Trump taking credit for overturning Roe versus Wade. And as, you know, the previous president expressed his intentions quite clearly. And fast forward to just recently where he's proud of what he did. You know, so he's always bragging whichever interview he does, like, yeah, I got Roe versus Wade overturned. So Republicans don't care about women. He doesn't care about women. Definitely not.
No. And you know what else he said in an interview? They had to kind of push him to get an answer out of him. But they asked him if he could be punished if she has an illegal abortion. And he said, yes, she should have some sort of punishment. There you go.
Exactly. But, you know, the key role for the vice president, the nation enters the election year and everything, and Biden and Harris hold similar approval ratings and the vice president ratings among key subgroups have varied, suggesting views of the vice president are not deeply entrenched. You know, so it remains to be seen whether Kamala Harris can motivate these constituents to back Joe Biden in 2024. And polling nationally and in battleground states suggests Biden, who's 81 years old, is weak with young voters, as well with black voters and other voters of color. I don't know why that is, because haven't people learned from 2016 that, you know, Trump is a racist, misogynist, homophobic, xenophobic pig, you know?
What did he say about the Haiti and the African nations? What did he say about them? Remember?
But that they're a shithole. That they're a shithole.
Yeah.
So why would any black person or color, person of color, vote Republican and vote for this clown, this loser?
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, it included plans that the vice president hit the trail, and often there are also expected to be additional hires, including top political operatives, Megan Jones, who brought on by the campaign and is based in Battleground, Nevada, and the Biden campaign signaled her robust campaign schedule in the months to come. And Harris is headed to Las Vegas over the weekend, ahead of the state's Democratic primary, marking a 10th visit to the state since taking office. And, you know, Harris, often punching bag on the right, earned rare praise of Kelly McEnany, who was Trump's one-time press secretary, for a recent appearance in The View. And I quote McEnany, who said on Fox News, quote, "I disagree with almost everything she said in this interview. I will say it was one of her better interviews when it comes to style." So the abortion remains a key issue in 2024. Do you think women, millennials, and Generation X and whomever will come out for the Democratic side, or will they fall for the, you know, bullshit that, you know, Republicans spewing? Because according to the poll numbers, I know you can't believe in poll numbers, but, you know, what does it say that, you know, the abortion is number one issue, but yet still Biden and Harris is still low down in the polls? What's your thought on that, Lori?
You know how I feel about polls, number one. And we're going to have a Gen Z guest on in a few weeks, and we'll ask that question, because honestly, I don't see that will happen. I don't think they will turn against Biden and Kamala Harris. I don't, because they're well aware about, you know, the gun issue, you know, the environment issue, climate change issue. They're well aware of course, women's rights, abortion rights. You know, they want, you know, their school, they want help with school loans. They want that fixed. So I cannot see them turning their backs on the Democrats. I truly can't see it. So it remains, I'm very excited to talk to this young man in a few weeks, because I really want to get into their heads. I want to understand what they're thinking, and it might be eye opening for us. So that's going to be coming up, but that's my opinion.
Yes, ma'am. So how about you, Doris? What do you think?
Oh, Doris, yeah. Doris,
okay.
Did she leave?
No, she's still online, but I can't hear anything. Elaine, what do you think about this? Will the millennials and Generation Z just come out for the Democratic side, or will, because of what happened in Gaza, it's, you know, turning against Democrats because of the whole Gaza-Israel thing?
Well, I think that there's a couple representatives that better get out there and start doing some explaining. I have yet to hear any real criticism against Hamas.
Yeah.
So until that happens, I don't know. I don't know what to say with the younger voters.
I'll tell you what I can say to that. Here's one of my things, too, is that so this administration hasn't exactly been, like, perfect on this issue, I will also say that every Republican who has been up on that stage during the debates earlier this year and last year have all stated that they would be worse on the issue, and they straight up told you that. They all said, including Trump, all said that Biden isn't, quote-unquote, pro-Israel enough, and that they would give Israel even more money, and they would continue to ramp up the ethnic cleansing and the genocide going on out there. I remember back in 2016 when Chris Christie said that he would, quote-unquote, carpet bomb, I think he said carpet bomb Syria or some part of Russia or whatever that was, and amping up a war with them, essentially implying that. So at least with Biden, there is a chance that we could get a ceasefire, whereas if any other, you know, if a Republican was president, even if it wasn't Trump, there'd be no chance of a ceasefire at all. And this is what I have to remind a lot of the younger voters about.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a representative in our in Michigan that we need some talking to. Maybe you should talk to her.
Are you talking about?
She's the one that has roiled up the young people without going about the situation the proper way by sitting down and talking to the people that she's in office with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about Rashida.
Pardon?
Yeah.
You're talking about Rashida.
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? I'll say this. I think I understand the intention of what she's doing. And I just think that there's two different ways I can look at this. Here's the main way I see it. I think it's a way to really put the pressure on the administration to do a ceasefire. You know, in the same way that I talk about how we put pressure on the administration to do other things like reduce student debt, we need to work on canceling out school lunch debt, canceling out, reducing, at least if not cancel out, medical debt, legalize marijuana across the board, do a $15 minimum wage across the board. And I feel better about the fact that it's easier for us to fight with and to pressure a Democratic administration. To fight with the Democratic administration that's going to pressure them into doing the right thing as opposed to fighting a Republican administration that is going to do nothing about it. I mean, Elaine, I mean, what do you think of that take?
I don't know. I don't really understand what you're trying to say. I know where the problem is in Michigan, and it's Rashida.
I'm saying the reason why, to my understanding, the reason why Rashida is doing this is because she is basically putting out a message to Biden saying that there's a higher chance that you could lose if you don't
That's
do a ceasefire.
That's not the way you put the message out. You don't do it in public.
Yeah,
somebody's got to sit down and talk to that woman.
Yeah. No,
well,
hold
on a second. I'm just giving you the perspective from her lens. What she's basically saying is that if I do this openly and I get more and more people on board with me, this will up the pressure, because the problem with a lot of representatives in government, and this happens with Democrats
but
and Republicans,
Eric,
and we've seen it.
Eric, what's happening is these young people do not know the history of the Middle East. Okay.
For sure.
First of all, they do not know the history. They do not know how many wars, you know, they have fought with this, you know, the Muslims and Pakistanians and the Palestinians, you know, and for that reason, I feel that she gaslit because, and this is my opinion, because what she did was make it sound like Israel is the bad guy. She never mentioned Hamas. She never mentioned that Hamas caused it all by bombing Israel. But do I think that Netanyahu now is gone over? Yes, I do. But I also feel that she should have just maybe called President Biden, set up a meeting with him. He would have spoke to her over the phone, and that's how she should handle it. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my opinion.
One thing, wait. Before we go any further, there's a ringing in the background. It's annoying. Could you please turn off or, you know, hang up and answer that, because it's annoying. It's distracting. Please. Whoever it is.
I mean, somebody might be calling on my laptop. Let me take care of that. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, and we'll have another caller, 515-605-9802. Say your first name, where you're calling from. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. What's cooking?
Oh, this is Naj in Atlanta. What's going on here?
Hi,
Naj. Oh, good.
Hey. How y'all doing?
So, how do you think it's going, the campaign?
What did you say, the campaign?
Uh-huh. The Biden campaign. How's it going? How's Georgia feel about it?
Well, I think Georgia, you know, Georgia's kind of static. Georgia's going to be what it's going to be. We're going to have Atlanta and the more urban areas of Georgia who are going to vote for Biden. And, of course, once you get to really deep south Georgia, it gets really rural and real red. So, I mean, those dynamics are going to exist. The question is turnout. Last time, because of Stacey Abrams' work, you know, the turnout in Georgia was amazing. Hopefully that happens again. But, you know, it kind of hinges, like, just like you guys are talking about Michigan, it kind of hinges on those two things. What happens?
Scaring me right now. Yeah. Michigan is kind of scaring me right now. So I don't know. We shall see. We were just talking about Rasheed. What is her last? Rasheed.
Tlaib.
Okay. Tlaib. Yeah. And, you know, how she came out against, she got all the young people all, you know, fired up because, you know, the bombing.
She blamed President Biden.
And she blamed President Biden for it. And, you know, I mean, it's not really his fault. Actually, they were supposed to have a meeting. He was supposed to send some people here to the White House. And last week he said he was going to do it. And today he said they're not coming. So what more can they do? Blinken was just there again. How many times has Blinken been there? Honestly. You know, I mean, what more can we do? The only thing left to do is to tell them no more money. That's what I think.
Amen.
No more money.
And the thing about it,
we'll give Israel
$10 million a day, you know, and for them to, like, you know, scoff at us and ignore us, you know, and not try to, like, have peace and come to the table with Palestinians, that's just wrong.
Right.
And we should cut the funding to them, you know.
That's what I just, yeah. I agree. I mean, that might be the only thing that gets through, you know, Netanyahu's head, is there's no more money coming, you know? And then
Netanyahu should be the cause because he is a Zionist piece of garbage. Say that again.
Right. So that was always the answer, cutting off the money. That was always the answer. The problem was Blinken and Biden weren't willing to go that far. Not only did they continue funding, but they even, you know, went outside of Congress a few times and didn't even get their say in it in order to continue the funding. So that's the problem.
Yeah.
Now, with Rashida in Michigan, I think we got to be careful, though. These young people we're talking about actually do have autonomy. These young folks, through TikTok, educating each other and then finding books and reading about this situation. It wasn't just that Rashida came out so aggressive with this. It was also that these young folks are watching the bodies themselves and were like, okay, again, think about who we're talking about. These kids always got a tablet, phone, or computer in their hands, and they started to look into things. So they know about 1948. They know about the Nakba. They know about there's a whole history of this issue before October 7th. And honestly, Israel is creating a scenario to where they'll never be who they were as far as credibility across the world. So today, the UN voted on an immediate ceasefire. Now, with the whole UN deciding to do that, we'll see if Israel is willing to follow through on this. But the main point I was getting at with bringing that part up was the same issue. Young folks and this issue overseas, those are the two biggest issues. The stuff at the border, that's more, you know, right-wing Trump stuff that's really you know, there just to kind of get their voters excited, but it's not as important as, of an issue on the Dem side. But more than anything, like you guys tonight, I think you've done a good job of laying out a case for Biden, but the biggest issue with politics today is we get things as bullet points, as if it's a PowerPoint presentation. We did this, we did this, we did this, we did this. The problem is that's not a vision. And what people actually need politically in this country and most countries is a vision. Because think about any problem that you can, and you can get sociologists and economists to come together, draw up a white paper, and then say, hey, if you apply this white paper, you know, to whatever issue you have, this will solve those problems. Problem with that is there's nothing connecting to it. It's really cold and clinical way of solving problems.
Yep.
But if you tie a vision to these things, like I think Biden should even step up and say, look, when you look at our birth rate and you look at the fact that we're actually going to need more people in this country, the fact that you people are so anti-immigrant and using these racist tropes to move forward, when in actuality, these are the people who are going to be working in nursing homes. These are the people who are going to be working at the, you know, the bottom of the economic food chain. And they're going to be taxpaying Americans who are going to help a lot of lives. So there's a lot to this. But the main component I would say is you have to get a vision of what Biden's America will be in 4 years and what Trump's America will be in 4 years. Get rid of the bullet points and give people the narrative or a story into what something they can believe in. I think that's the thing that helps. Because hell, we're all interested in this stuff every day, but your grandmother's not. She's checking in and then checking out. We got to think about that.
No, you're right. And a lot of it, like I was saying before, and like what David was saying, is a lot of it. It's a long game. You know, a lot of what he put in place, people aren't feeling right now. They'll feel it maybe in 4 years or in 2 years, but they're not feeling it right now. And so for that reason, I agree with you. You know, it's just things that are not tangible. They're not seeing, you know, the environment, you know, clear up and whatever else, you know, all the infrastructure and all of that. They're not seeing it visually.
So, Naj, I have a question. Naj, I have a question. I don't mean to cut you, Lori.
I believe
that Netanyahu and his government are Zionist pieces of shit who just want to kill Palestinians and take over Gaza.
Yep.
How do you feel about that? I'm not saying all Israelis are Zionist pieces of shit, but I know definitely for sure Netanyahu is a Zionist piece of shit because he's carpet bombing the whole of Gaza, flattening it out like a I don't know what, you know? Okay, how much more bombing can you do? The people are out in the middle of the desert not having anything. And that's why the millennials and Generation Z protesting. One protest coming up this Saturday at the UNM campus, and I hope to go after work and everything to say and talk to people why they're protesting against Israel. And I have a feeling that's one of the reasons, Zionism. Zionism is not anything good, okay? Netanyahu is a Zionist.
David, you've got two things going on there. You've got Netanyahu is doing this day out of
Elaine,
just like Trump. And then you have Hamas, who is using those innocent people, and he don't give a damn that they're getting killed. You've got two snakes. I don't know what the answer is. I think the answer is hold the money back.
Well, did you hear what Kirk said? John Kirk, he's the one that said, and this is a problem I've had because I've looked at that area for a long time. John Kirk said that there's never a line that they could cross. Now, you tell anybody that and see what you're going to end up with. That's where we've ended
Indeed. And I think it's important that David goes to that rally and talks to some of those young people. I think that'll be really interesting to see what they have to say. But, again, when you're condemning Zionism, you are not condemning Judaism, and you are not condemning Jewish people. That is not what you're doing.
You're
talking about the ideology from Ben-Gurion, where they said that God decided that this was for them, and any measures that they use are justified. So when we look at that scenario and say, wait a minute, you're actually trying to clear these people out, and we're seeing in New York and in some other places where they're actually advertising to sell the land that they're talking about clearing people from. So at that point, you know, we've reached the threshold of monster, you know, human activity. At that point, we're looking at a slow-moving genocide. So, yes, it has to be stopped. And, again, I think it's very important that people clarify and make sure people understand. Norm Finkelstein, who is a man of Jewish descent, who is really good on this issue, you can catch him anywhere online talking about this stuff and get a better understanding of it. You can read some of his books, some of the stuff Noam Chomsky has written. over the years. Yep. It's been really helpful for people to try to understand this, you know, the situation. But it's not as complicated as people are making it. This is a state that is driven by the idea of genocide and land grabbing, and that state wouldn't exist without the funding of the United States. It gets $6 billion a year, and during wartime, much, much, much more. So ultimately, if we really want justice over there, it should be a one-state solution, but Palestinians should have full rights and privileges the same as every other citizen. It can't be this partitioned-off section where they're essentially kind of regulated to a ghetto, and anytime, like remember, man, when you're talking about like global situations, even in the UN Charter, they say the self-defense against oppression is a human right. So, like, as bad as October 7th was, well, go back and look at the rest of the year, and what you'll find in that year is there were more children killed there than anywhere else in the world. So when they tell you about well, they're human shields. Well, this is one of the smallest square areas of mileage where any group of people have been packed into. So there's no way for there not to be collateral damage if there's anything done in the form of bombing. So, yeah, all of this is terrible. And the idea that we have to talk about these things and that they want to make, well, condemn Hamas. Okay, Hamas doesn't have to be condemned. They were voted in decades ago by people, for the most part, who weren't even old enough to vote, the people who are alive now in Palestine. Right. So we can't even say that the Palestinians chose them as leadership. So, yeah, man, this is a terrible situation. And history will not be kind to the people who chose to either look away or just buy into every bit of propaganda they can find online.
Can I say one thing?
And what Israel is doing to the Palestinians, what's the difference between what Nazis did to Jews? It's the same goddamn thing, you know?
It's correct.
No, it is.
Does anyone know what the original Zionists said in the 1880s, the founding Zionists? Part of that whole thing was where they have a land and the others are to be transferred out. Transfer is a nice word. That was back in the founding in the 1880s when the original Zionists, nobody knows that, but they've done exactly what they said.
Yep, Ben-Gurion.
Exactly.
And the other thing is that we know that Netanyahu is doing that to save his own skin as well.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
Yeah, because politically, he has no case. Yeah, he has no case. He had a corruption trial. The families of the people who were held hostage have been openly, protesting against him outside his home even. So this idea that everybody over there is signing up for this is wrong too. Because when you look at some of the other Jewish brothers over there who are protesting and you see them getting beat up by the same police, you know, in that area, that this is not something that everybody is signing up for. And again, one state solution for everybody with all full rights and privileges is the actual answer. The two state solution thing has kind of sailed away with how much land they've partitioned. But, you know, as a young kid watching the videos of the settlers like walking into someone's home and taking over, and then having the soldiers remove them, like things that we all kind of saw over the years, but we didn't know the full story until, you know, we took a little time to get into it. But, ultimately this has to stop. And strategically, if they're not a clean state as far as being credible amongst the rest of the world, what value do they serve the United States to even be sending that money every year at that point? So, that's another part of this issue.
We're complicit. Absolutely. And then there's another twist that comes in. I don't know if all of you heard Jared Kushner.
Water
for land.
Yeah. And he
was looking for beachfront property on Gaza.
And this is what he said. And this is what he said at an event on February the 15th at Harvard University. Kushner, who served as a senior advisor to Trump during his term in the White House, said Gaza's waterfront property could be very valuable if people would focus on building up livelihoods. And then he went on to say, it's a little it's a little bit of unfortunate. It's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there. But from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up, Kushner said. He then added that Israel should move civilians into the NEGEV desert, Negev desert, in the country's southern region. And, of course, media went nuts over that because isn't that basically just kicking people
ethnic
out of their
cleansing.
Homes?
Their
well, that's what they've been doing.
Ethnic cleansing, basically. Ethnic cleansing.
Absolutely.
And this is
yes.
what we did to Native Americans, and this is what the Nazis did to the Jews in Europe, you know. So what
he's
the Jews
so
doing now with the Palestinians is genocide. And this asshole, Jared Kushner, I have the clip here. I'm going to play it soon. You know, I mean, he got $2 billion from the Saudis. What that $2 billion was for, nobody knows up to this day. So here is the clip of Jared Kushner being a racist piece of vile shit. And here it is.
Very valuable. Thing that I would try to do if I was Israel right now is I would just bulldoze something in the Negev. I would try to move people in there. Are people in Israel seriously talking about that possibility? That hosting Gazan refugees in what is considered Israel proper? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be something you would try to work on. I'm sitting in my ass beach right now. I would say, how do we deal with the terror threat that is there so that it cannot be a threat to Israel or to Egypt, right? I think that both sides are spending a fortune on military. I think neither side really wants to have, you know, a terrorist organization enclave right between them. And Gaza's waterfront property, it could be very valuable to if people would focus on kind of building up you know, livelihoods. You think all the money that's gone into this tunnel network and all the munitions, if that would have gone into education or innovation, what could have been done? And so I think that it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there, but I think from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up.
Why, this man's a demon, for real. Jared Kushner is a demon, a damn demon. How can a terrorist like him call landowners terrorists?
Yeah.
You know, want to move them out of their property? He's drooling to make a buck. What a snake. Horrible, unbearable, unbelievable. I can't stand this man.
And a man whose specialty is real estate should not be allowed to be some kind of arbiter to speak on this situation. Anyway, just like when he was in the Trump administration, they sent him over with the idea that they were going to create peace. And basically they laughed at him like, this is a non-serious person coming into a real serious issue. And we can have these conversations while also still being aware of the pogroms and the many atrocities that the Jewish people faced, especially while they were in Europe. We can still look at those things and say, yes, we understand like generational paranoia of Jewish folks who have been through hell when it comes to these different atrocities. But that doesn't mean we ignore what's being done now and don't address it forcefully. So, you know, that's the tightrope we kind of have to walk within these conversations, because on the right wing, there's so much anti-Semitism that gets to the level of that old Henry Ford stuff. And it's like, no, I'm criticizing that government's policy. I am not making a claim against people and saying that this is some, you know, cultural or genetic issue. No, this is a governmental issue with their policy.
Exactly.
You know,
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, Debbie Washington Schultz, okay? She put out a resolution, and I don't know what happened with it, but I know what it means, and a lot of people really don't know what's going on over there, really, or the history. But she put out that they should say that anti-Zionism is equivalent to anti-Semitism, which means they don't have any say at all, because if you don't know what Zionism is, and I just said what the founders did, and they've done it ever since. When they got in there, that's what they did. It's not like a surprise. Hamas didn't come out of nowhere. I'm going to send you, Lori, just some Jewish authors and people speaking, and they're not Zionists, but most people don't even know what that means.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the nervous bastard, You know, they want to build resorts on the graves of children, Palestinian children, who were slaughtered and murdered.
They don't have hearts. He doesn't have a soul. He is just a money grabbing machine.
Whore.
That's all. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he just showed his support for ethnic cleansing of Gaza in favor of Israel's possession of land, which is not theirs to own. You know, so he has no moral consciousness of the crimes being committed in Gaza. What a shame. I'm on the radio. If you want to call in, call in. This is my opinion based on facts, okay? And every time you talk, you throw me off. Please.
Mm-hmm.
Me and the wife have different, you know, she's very 100% pro-Palestinian. I mean, pro-Israel. I'm pro-Palestine, okay? So, you know, every time I try and make a point, she talk and just throw me off completely.
Mm-hmm.
So if listeners out there listening, I apologize for that tantrum, but, you know, I was being distracted. And his dad went to prison. Jared Kushner's father went to prison. So criminals are running this family, it seems like, you know?
Never forget, I'm sorry, Lori, but never forget during the Trump administration, so-called opportunity zones led by Jared Kushner. Now, what happened in these so-called opportunity zones that were supposed to help Latino and black communities who are, you know, marginalized? Well, what actually happened was the people with the biggest wealth moved in, took the tax break, and sat on the property, which they are now going to gentrify as we see the years go by. But it was supposed to be this minority outreach from the Trump administration. So, you know, it's amazing how much people forget in so quick a time. Like, the biggest issue with Trump isn't that he's a racist. It's that he's incompetent, and he kind of encourages the worst among right-wing hysteria and policy that they normally wouldn't be able to get past. But with him, they can always just pass it and then, you know, pin the tail on the donkey when people discover later on things like the tax reform, where the wealthy 1% got a permanent tax cut and working class folks got a tax increase that was sunset, you know, that hit 2 years later. So people didn't know. Mm-hmm. Some of them are mad at Biden for something that Trump wrote.
Mm-hmm. And he increased the debt a whole lot. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Really increased.
Yeah.
Today, we wouldn't have
it's
a debt.
It's legal until it's challenged, and I have to just get the right people in office and take off that so-called lifetime tax cut to the rich.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know what's needed now, ladies and gentlemen? Just put a little mustache on Jared Kushner, and he'll be perfect. Sig Heil, you bastard. You know, calling the people who own the land terrorists when the real terrorist is him. You know, how dare you go in there and try to build, you know, beachfront property. They tried that in the Caribbean. They tried it in Jamaica. Going to Montego Bay and saying, oh, you know, suppose the land worth $2 million. They want to buy it for like $500. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an example. You get what I'm saying? And they think they own the world. They think they can throw the money around. And the people of Jamaica said no. God, this is beachfront property. A lot of fishermen depend on it, you know, and it destroy the environment if you have, you know, something like that. It going to erode the soil, blah, blah, blah. And Trump sent down his Secretary of State and, you know, to belittle the government of Jamaica. You know, the government of Jamaica stood firm and said no. And so what Trump did in reaction is take away the foreign aid to build infrastructure in Jamaica. And who had to turn to? Communist China. I know they get even more upset that we turn to Communist China for money because Trump withheld the aid package that was, you know, given to us. Congress approved it. You know, so we cannot make this man, Donald Trump, come back in power because he's spiteful, he's vengeful, he's disgusting, and America don't deserve that. The world don't deserve that. And we're going to lose a lot of respect from the world if Donald Trump, a lackey to Vladimir Putin and the Russian Kremlin, is put back in power. And God knows, if he's put back in power, will he leave after that 4 years? I highly doubt it, because I saw what happened on January 6, 2021, when he tried to overthrow the legitimate elected government.
You know, so thank you everybody for calling and everything. We're out of time. We didn't talk about Project 2025, unfortunately. But hopefully Thursday we can. Thanks to Naj in Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks to Doris. And thanks to Elaine. And thanks to Eric, all in Michigan.
Eric.
We'll see you Thursday. Yeah. And this has been Kitchen Politics 123. I said everybody's name. This has been Kitchen Politics 123 for March 25th, 2024. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Lori.
Good night, everyone. Good night, David. Everyone have a good night, and we'll see you on Thursday. And, yes, we hope to talk about Project 2025 once again. We can't forget about it.
Good night, y'all.
Good night.
I'm alone, feeling afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm, there's a golden sky. And the sweet silver sound of love. Oh, come to the land. Oh, come to the land for your dreams. And roll, oh, in your heart, and you'll thank you.